A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host for this journey into issues facing the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues these organizations are facing. We'll look at the impact of the economy, technology, and society on the arts, the importance of arts education, and how these organizations and ensembles are adjusting and innovating as they face the future. Today, we'll start a two-week look at opera festivals and how they are offering new alternatives and formats both for traditional opera fans and new audiences. The focus today is on Opera Philadelphia, which is launching its inaugural festival, 017, this fall. My guests will be senior producer David Levy and New Works administrator Sarah Williams. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra has extended its contract with music director Louis Langres by 2 years through the 2021-2022 season. Langres, who is also music director of Lincoln Center's Mostly Mozart Festival, has led the orchestra since the fall of 2013. In that time, he has overseen projects that include the One City, One Symphony initiative and the annual Luminosity Performance, which combines an outdoor concert with an elaborate light display. As arts organizations continue to ponder the fate of the National Endowment for the Arts, Lincoln Center and its constituent organizations, including the Metropolitan Opera and New York Philharmonic, called for continued support of the federal agency, citing the human and economic benefits of many of the programs supported through its funding. In a statement, the organizations credited the arts with inspiring people, promoting achievement and healing, and contributing to the U.S. economy. A formal federal budget proposal, including details on whether the NEA will continue to be funded, is expected later this month. Opera America has named the latest recipients of its audience development grants designed to support new operas and deepen audience engagement. Among the projects are Ardea Arts Bounce, the basketball opera, which will bring a performance to Lexington, Kentucky in partnership with UK Opera Theater and include local basketball players, youth, and community leaders in a performance on a basketball court. Fiesta Fort Worth, a public festival presented by Fort Worth Opera that will include a simulcast of the mariachi opera Cruzar la Cara de la Luna, and a performance of Jennifer Higdon's Cold Mountain by North Carolina Opera that will include a panel session and performances for military communities presented with the USO of North Carolina. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world.
Did I wake you? I couldn't sleep. I've been walking up and down the hallway to lull myself to sleep.
Again.
Again.
So, would you rather take in your opera performances one at a time throughout a season, or binge watch 3, 4, or even 5 in a short span of time? Opera companies are increasingly betting that the binge-watch approach is becoming more popular and scheduling their seasons accordingly. In addition, new works and venues are becoming a greater part of the program mix. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll look at two opera companies and their upcoming festival lineups, starting today with Opera Philadelphia. Next fall marks the launch of its inaugural festival, 017, which will present 25 performances of 5 productions across 6 venues over the course of 12 days. The bridge music you just heard was an excerpt from Lembit Beecher's I Have No Stories to Tell You, a contemporary opera exploring the after effects of war, which will be performed in the Great Stair Hall of the Philadelphia Museum of Art during the festival. David Levy is Opera Philadelphia's Vice President of Artistic Operations and Senior Producer of the festival, and Sarah Williams is New Works Administrator. I spoke with them recently about the festival details and what they hope it will achieve.
We, up to this point, have produced our seasons in Stagioni, which is one production at a time. And through some pretty intense consumer research and self-inspection, we felt that we needed to make a change in our organization to reflect today's consumer behavior, which has changed over time. In that the sort of old model of subscription consumption was dwindling in terms of popularity. And in order to energize the city around our productions and in order to encourage sort of binge watching and consumption of more than one production, felt that that research and those ideas were all leading us towards festival. So starting in 2017, we will be, in effect, sort of packaging and delivering at least five different offerings simultaneously to address that sort of new consumer behavior and desire.
Now, it is a combination of classic repertoire, but also a good number of new works. Sarah, what does the new work aspect bring to the concept of 017?
You have a variety of stories, so it's varied and it's very progressive. So you have, you know, it's even a lot of our tradition, our standard repertoire is really, you're represented by fresh and new and interesting productions that you haven't seen before with visionary artists and directors and creatives and scenic designers. I think the same thing goes for like our new works. It's not so different in that way, except these works are being created today in responds to, as you should, the artistry of the musicianship of the reactions of what's happening in the world today. And so you have a lot of creative artists that are doing so at various levels, a variety of stories, which dictates a variety of sound worlds and soundscapes that come from there, which create a diversity of casting, which brings in a variety of different audiences. And it's really thrilling and exciting.
Well, walk us through, if you could, some of these new productions and how they represent that and, you know, how you decided that these would be perfect fits for this first inaugural festival?
Well, I think what we'll start with is Elizabeth Cree. We've got three world premieres as part of the festival. Elizabeth Cree by Mark Campbell and Kevin Plitz is one of them. We Shall Not Be Moved by Daniel Bernard Romain and Mark Bamuthi Joseph is another. And The Wake World by David Hertzberg is a third. But I'll start with Elizabeth Cree. You know, we have a history with Kevin Plitz. We co-produced his Pulitzer Prize-winning production of Silent Night with the Minnesota Opera. And I think everybody was excited about his voice on the operatic stage, and certainly through his debut. We immediately started talking about possible next projects and when those could fit and work for us. Really the idea of sort of helping him discover his chamber opera voice as opposed to his grand opera voice was something that we felt, we could help with him, or we could sort of launch down and take this journey with him. Because it's a new way for him to express himself and because we're trying to give our audiences new ways in which to experience the art form, those two things go hand in hand. So it's an artist exploring sort of a new facet of his identity and letting the audience into that experience. So it really fits and dovetails very nicely with the mission of the festival.
Moved is fascinating. So it came from our community engagement program, Hip Hopera. We had brought in Daniel Bernard Romain, who's the composer, and Mark Bamuthi Joseph, who's the librettist, in to work with a variety of kids and hearing their stories and kind of going through their daily lives and their process and the response that Mark and Daniel had to the kids' stories. It kind of inspired moving into this opera and this production. It kind of fueled their artistic incentive and journey a story that they wanted to tell. So we have Mark Bamuthi Joseph as a librettist, who's a spoken word artist, and Daniel Bernard Romain as a composer. Director and dramaturg is Bill T. Jones. And it basically, what the story is about, it's kind of, you know, you have a series of various tragic incidents, but you have these five North Philly teens that kind of find refuge in this abandoned house, failed kind of by a bankrupt school system. The family is kind of inspired by these ghosts that inhabit the home and are squatting in this home. And it's kind of what their destiny is and their resistance. And it combines a variety of things: spoken word, contemporary movement, video projections, classical music, hip-hop, R&B, jazz. It really takes who Daniel is as a musician and an artist and combines all of that. But it also, the music is so representative of the story, the ages of the characters that we're telling. And it's not something that you often see in opera whatsoever. It's very much like a music theater piece that's driven by the storyline and these very individual characters.
Well, one other very interesting aspect of the festival is the variety of venues that you're using. Again, some traditional, but some also very non-traditional. I wanted to give you a chance to talk a bit. First of all, you'll be in the Philadelphia Museum of Art for War Stories. How do you envision that? What will the audience be able to experience through that?
Place of performance is very important to us, and has been since we adjusted our season to include theaters beyond the Academy of Music. We love the Academy. It's an incredible venue, but it's not appropriate for everything. So, you know, that move to the Perlman Theater to stage chamber scale works then led us, and actually through a variety of different programs, certainly our Composer in Residence program and our American Repertory program, as we, you know, explored new works and new subjects. The fact that we love to partner with others, like-minded artistic individuals and organizations that can sort of help stretch and push the boundaries of the form led us to develop the site-specific work a couple of years ago with the Bearded Ladies Cabaret. And that sort of idea of exploring venues that are appropriate to the pieces is sort of key towards how we want to stage works, the right place for the right piece. Philadelphia Museum of Art is in itself just a stunning location, and it has a variety of place within its own building. War Stories is a double bill. The first portion of it is a piece by Monteverdi, and the second is a new work by Lemet Beecher that was written as a response to the Monteverdi, a contemporary response to the Monteverdi, which took place in the First Crusade. So, you know, we get to explore the appropriate place in the Philadelphia Museum of Art for each portion of the evening. So in the medieval cloisters, for example, is where the Monteverdi will take place. And then we'll move the action and the audience into the Great Stair Hall, in which Lemet Beecher's contemporary piece can take place. The Philadelphia Museum of Art is an incredible partner and is really letting us inhabit in residence their spaces throughout the festival in order to pull this off, and is interested in having us and our audience explore beyond those couple of spaces as well as a part of the evening. And so we'll work with them really to marry the appropriate places within their building to the piece itself.
The other one, which again is also very place-based and in fact brings the actual subject matter, and that's the Barnes.
The Wake World.
How did that all come together, and what can we expect?
What's a little different about Wake World is that it's a kind of a direct response to the space, you know what I mean, versus it's actually written for that space and hopefully a variety of spaces that emulate that. But David Hertzberg and I, the composer David Hertzberg, went to the Barnes a variety of times. And it was very cool to kind of walk through the entirety of what the Barnes offers and to see his kind of reaction and what he was taking in and what he was inspired by, because it varied so much. And you would think initially that someone would go into the Barnes and be immediately somehow want to write a response to the collection. And I loved what David did, which was so kind of abstract and out of the box. And I think he'd been inspired by Aleister Crowley, this poet and writer. And I think the more that he kind of walked through the Barnes, in particular to the exhibit, he started making more of a connection, direct connection to Dr. Barnes. And he started seeing this connection between the two of them as they were both very prolific and polarizing, artistic, visionary people. And that's actually where his core idea for the story and response is going to be. So that's the general take on what the Wake World is.
Well, I was curious about the logistics of this festival. You have 25 performances, several different productions, as we just talked about, several different venues. What were some of the challenges in getting all these pieces to fit together?
I'd say the schedule is the biggest challenge for all of us. Being in multiple venues at the same time, rehearsing simultaneously, opening back-to-back, you know, we're a company, you know, used to doing one thing at a time and sort of dedicating all of our resources, both human and otherwise, to our projects. So finding ways to make the schedule work, really for some of those resources, in particular the orchestra, trying to maximize the amount that our core orchestra can perform was really the driver of the minutia of the schedule from the beginning. And you know, we layer, for example, the Academy of Music production with the Perlman production and keep those two productions completely off of each other. The Academy will use the largest orchestra, for example, and Cree is only 15 or 16 players. So can we then layer the other smaller experiences on top of Cree, for example, and in that way utilize and maximize our core and tenured group of players for every project that we do? So that's the biggest struggle, is the schedule. I'd say, you know, making extensions of ourselves to govern operations in places. And this is our music staff and our production staff and our technical staff all need sort of surrogates in each of these venues, depending on the time and the schedule, to look out for our, you know, our management of these projects throughout the process. We did some testing of this model this last fall, actually. We did three productions at once. It was the Turandot and the Breaking the Waves and the Macbeth that we did with the Fringe Arts Festival, and we tested a lot of these challenges, scheduling and personnel, to see if our plan, you know, we thought was going to work. And for the most part, we felt very confident coming away from that to do more and what we would need to do in order to accomplish more. It will take, you know, a variety of seasonal staff to join our ranks, training of that staff, you know, careful selection of who that staff will be to help us support the artists in repertory in the same way that we support the artists when we do them do the projects as standalone.
Now, there will also be two additional productions later on in the spring season. How did what you did with 017 affect how you approached the spring portion of your regular season?
Well, it's a good question. We, you know, we talk about sort of that subscription model and how that has evolved. It certainly hasn't disappeared. And so I think what's unique for our organization is we're not just doing a festival. We're continuing to do an Academy series throughout the year. And we love the Academy. As I mentioned before, it's an amazing venue. And for the right pieces and the right projects, it's the best theater for those things. It's an amazing theater. So we continue our Academy season. You know, Magic Flute is part of 017, and then we move on to George Benjamin's Written on Skin, and finally we do a new production of Carmen. I'd say the way in which the festival might have influenced the remainder of the season is just in the nature of approaching each of those Academy titles as a new work and as a new production, and exploring each of them anew. Now, Written on Skin hasn't had that much time in the repertory, and yet there's only one production out there of it, and we wanted to approach it and find another way in, so to speak. And the same holds true for Carmen. We had an amazing experience with director Paul Curran, who staged our Traviata for us last fall, I guess it was, the fall before last, and really enjoyed working with him and thought that he would bring the same enthusiasm and exploration to Carmen that he did for Traviata. It was his first time staging Traviata. He's, you know, he's been a top director for ages and had never done Traviata before, and this will be his first Carmen. And sort of the way in which we explore new works and the way in which we explore them as part of the festival, I think, continues to influence the rest of our programming in the same way. We want to be with Paul on his journey as he discovers Carmen for the first time, and I think that in turn will resonate really well for all of us, hopefully with the end result.
Well, certainly Opera Philadelphia has made, you know, a pretty significant commitment to both new works, but also specifically American works. What have you been seeing over the years that you've been focusing on that in terms of audience response and how it's helped your company grow and expand its boundaries?
I think they've really gone on the ride with us and given us confidence to continue to pursue those kinds of works. You know, Sarah can chime in here, but one of the biggest things we talk about in our artistic planning meeting is what's going to inspire our artists. Because once our artists are inspired, that in turn will inspire the audience. And we've seen that bear fruit, and we've seen the audience be excited about the new work that we're doing, and that will only continue. Sarah, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, of course, big time on that one. I think that's the one thing, honestly, that sets our bar at this company, and just generally speaking, of how we are driven by providing opportunity for an avenue for creative artists to kind of express themselves. And I think there's no real better way to do that in this genre, in this field, than opera. And a lot of times you hear a lot of responses. So I have the most contact just by the nature of the job that I do with the actual creative artists, meaning the librettists and composers in particular. And the more we all travel and the more we constantly, like, you know, nationally and internationally and talk to as many people as we can and have our ears to the ground, we hear that response. That's the response we get, that we're known for fostering the artist's voice. And that's how we actually even get to choosing the new works that we have, or the creative teams that we have and the creative teams that we're talking to. They kind of, you know, we kind of come together with their ideas and what they're inspired by, because it's as David said so beautifully, as any artist is, if the artists themselves are inspired, if they're driven by that, you can only, as someone on the outside experiencing it, be that much more connected to it.
Well, one other aspect of the festival I wanted to ask about is your festival artist, or inaugural festival artist, will be Sandra Radvanovsky. What do you envision as her role as festival artist, and what are some of the things that she'll be participating in?
Well, she's going to do two main programs with us. One will be a recital in the Perlman Theater, same venue that we'll have Elizabeth Cree. The beautiful thing of the Perlman is that the stage house spins, and in one configuration it's a proscenium stage, and in another it's a jewel of a chamber music venue. She'll put on a personal and intimate recital in that space with piano. And then she'll participate in a masterclass with our emerging artists. And we think sort of that combination of her showing her artistry in performance in the same space and combined with fostering the next generation of artists, you know, will be a big and integral part of pushing the genre forward. It's really what we are trying to explore. And in this way, the audience who get to participate in both of those, you know, both of those functions, really, will get a chance to see that up close and personally, how you really deliver as an individual performance, and then how you can help foster that in the next generation. Just her artistry alone, I think, sets a standard for what we want performance to be. And her presence as a result, you know, will help to do that. And will hopefully sort of tease us for a future season when we can bring her back in a different capacity, which will happen in a number of years.
And as far as reaching new audiences, that certainly is something that opera companies have been eager to do, reach new types of audiences, new people who have never even thought about going to opera. Where do you see them fitting into the 017 puzzle?
I think, you know, one of the things we try to do is to partner with organizations where we have differences in audience, and each organization can bring their audience to the party. And for us, then we can, you know, reach someone that we wouldn't be able to otherwise. Our partnerships with the Fringe in the past have helped in this regard. And our partnerships with both museums going forward will help. Our partnership with the Wilma Theater, and that in turn with the Fringe, will, you know, continue to allow us to reach sort of new local audiences. Certainly the festival itself, we hope will allow us to reach new audiences outside of our region. And as festivals often do, will be a draw for someone to come in from out of town in order to do that. You know, we've certainly seen, and it's not my department, so I can't give you actual or exact figures, but we've certainly seen an influx of new audiences through those various partnerships. We had a ton of people new to us when we did the site-specific Andy a couple of years ago. We had a ton of people new to us when we did the work with the Fringe this last year. And we certainly see a ton of people new to us every year when we do the free broadcast Opera on the Mall. it doesn't necessarily translate in people who come to see us in the theater, but they do connect with us in a very real way at that event. And it's one of the reasons we love it so much and we continue to do it year over year.
I think just with the breadth of artistic volume and it's very groundbreaking, the variety of that we have. And I think that that even alone and naturally is always going to draw a variety of people, because you never know what you're going to expect with us. But I also think people have heard enough about us now and seen a little bit of kind of what we're doing and what we're exploring and experimenting with and developing and visioning and the type of artists that we're, you know, that are having this platform, that it's the artistic draw alone is just so appealing to so many different people.
And we hope that the festival itself will energize the city, will sort of bubble up for those that aren't always aware of what we're doing. And in a festival environment, one in which takes place in lots of different areas of the city, you know, we'll draw those inquisitive enough and adventurous enough to try us out if they haven't before.
Well, you referred to the broadcast on the Mall. I understand the exact production is yet to be announced, but at this point, is there anything specific you're looking to do as you incorporate that as part of the festival?
Yeah, it's always been part of our opening production and a way and part of us sort of kickstarting the cultural season in town, as our production is often one of the earliest to hit the scene in September. So we've been talking about ways in which to make it more of a civic event, including sort of lengthening the amount of activity that occurs at that venue. We haven't exactly decided what the format of that will be, but we want to have basically a big civic party or event or celebration of what our festival has accomplished during the last weekend of our festival, and open up that event for a longer period of time throughout the day. So that's still in discussion, but the impulse there is to really make it a season-ending celebration, make it and continue to make it open to the city as a whole, and sort of in a way as, you know, our gift to the city that's been so kind to us throughout the 10, 12 days of the festival up to that point.
And I understand also there will be efforts to draw in even more partners and really make this as citywide as possible. What are some of the early thoughts on how you may make that happen?
I know that we have been talking to hotel partners. We've been talking to the Philadelphia and the Tourism Board. We've been working with the city to talk about ways in which we can sort of engage different civic spaces throughout that besides just the performance venues. You know, we've got certainly partner organizations in terms of other performing organizations that will, continue to work with really well. And for now, those are the sort of the main players in our, in our development of the festival.
That was David Levy, Vice President of Artistic Operations at Opera Philadelphia and Senior Producer of O17, and Sarah Williams, New Works Administrator. More information is available at operaphila.org. I hope you enjoy the conversations I bring you each week on A Tempo and all of the other programs on the award-winning Classical Network. Remember that great programs like this are possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for joining me for A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. An archive of recent shows can be found anytime at our webcast page at wwfm.org. Join me next week for another look at the changing world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is supported by the listener members of the Classical Network.